Good afternoon and welcome to Central Coast Voices. I'm your host, Fred Monroe. I'm glad you're with us today. Glad you're listening to Public Radio KCBX because hopefully you have pledged and are part of our community. If you haven't noticed, this is fall pledge drive time and a lot of things going on. We're going to take a break from that for a little while and actually do some live radio program. So we're glad you're with us. The goal of Central Coast Voices is to bring you credible and valid information and insights from diverse members of our community. Central Coast Voices addresses how today's choices affect tomorrow's community. And boy, this is a topic that would really be in the category of how today's choices affect tomorrow's community. And we'll get into that in a little bit. And what we want to take a look at long-term ramifications of changes or lack of change in our society. This is a project of Action for Healthy Communities, and we're glad you're with us today. We're going to talk today about the harmful effects of today's marijuana on youth. I want to clarify because actually as we were reading that and putting this together, indeed that sentence is not grammatically incorrect. We are talking about how harmful effects of today's marijuana on youth, because what is today's marijuana for a lot of people may not be what other folks remember as today's marijuana. And it also is not what you may think of as what yesterday's marijuana was. And we'll get into that in a little further detail. Many experts have believe that the increasing legalization of marijuana in the U.S. has contributed to a growing belief that marijuana is a harmless drug, especially among youth. And that's pretty much what the topic will be today, is both the issues of marijuana use, harmlessness or harmfulness, if you will, within our youth community. With this misconception, youth are using drugs in increasing numbers, and as part of the Action Vital Signs report of 2016, there's a major increase in the consumption of marijuana among teens in San Luis Obispo County. In our 2016 study, 41% of 11th graders used marijuana in the past 30 days, compared to just 26% in 2013. That's a 15% increase in marijuana use in San Luis Obispo County in a three-year period of time for people who are basically between about 16 and a half and 18 years of age. It's a concern that is real. It affects our community in ways that we may not have thought about before, and that's one of the things that we're going to talk about today. Joining me today will be Jody Belsher, who is the producer, director, and director of the award-winning documentary film, The Other Side of Cannabis. And she's president of the nonprofit Posify, which I have P-O-S-A-F-Y, and I have trouble with trying to get Posify out as a word. Sorry, folks. Which is which stands for Prevention of Substance Abuse for Youth. And joining us today also is Tim Olivas, and he is the undersheriff of San Luis Obispo County, and he's a Posify advisory board member. We're going to look today at the harmful issues with regard to marijuana, especially for youth, and how it does have life-altering effects on the health and well-being of our community and our teenagers in the community. This is a call-in program. You are welcome to give us a call. The phone number is 781-3875. That's 805-781-3875. That is a different number than you've heard used a lot in the last few hours or few days during pledge drive. So please, that's the one that gets you direct to the studio to be part of the discussion today. I want to also remind you that this, even though this is a debatable topic for a lot of people, we are not running a debating society today. We are talking about medical implications and youth development implications in the issue. And we will have programs over a period of time looking at the legalization of marijuana, which is going on in the state of California and other states, and other medical issues. So I've basically told my guests today that we don't expect them to have to argue with anyone on this topic. We want them to share information with us, and we would appreciate this if you would be part of the discussion, and we'll have the debate some other time, maybe over coffee. The Center for Disease Control and Prevention has stated that that unlike adults, however, teen brain activity and development is a lot different than adults, and it really is a factor until at least their mid to late 20s. Marijuana use during this period may be harmful to a developing teen's brain. Research shows that marijuana use can have permanent effects on brain function of the developing brain when use begins in adolescence, especially when it is regular or heavy use. By the way, this is not a political discussion. That is a report from the Center for Disease Control, which I have to say, in my opinion, is probably one of the most neutral bodies we have in our federal government. And that's a key factor, because this is a topic that I'm sure my guests have heard debated a lot. Again, if you want to be part of the discussion, not the debate, you can give us a call at 805-781-3875. And I'll also remind you, the earlier you call in the program, the more likely it is we have an opportunity to include you in that discussion. So when you call in the last 10 or 15 minutes of the program, we sometimes don't have the chance to fit in that topic. Jody, I guess probably the best place to start is, how did this become an important topic for you?
Well, when my son was about 14 years old, he decided to start experimenting with marijuana. And it took several years for him. It doesn't always take that long of time for him to become addicted. By the time he was a junior in high school, he was showing signs of addiction. And he went from being an A student to a D student. He barely was able to graduate from San Luis High. We noticed that there was a big change in his personality. He ended up going off to college in Santa Barbara, and it really didn't take long before he returned home and had a psychotic break. Now, we didn't understand how this could happen from marijuana, because we had grown up in the 60s, 70s, and it was fairly benign. And so I started researching. When we took him to Stanford, they said that he had a cannabis-induced psychosis. Well, what's a cannabis-induced psychosis? I mean, that sounded crazy to me. So I, in my research, realized that I could contact the top researchers on marijuana in the brain and find out what was that. And I ended up going to Harvard. I flew to Boston. I took my camera. And I interviewed the top researchers on marijuana in the brain. And from what they told me was so frightening that I ended up doing this documentary and traveling all over the place and getting these stories from both researchers and from individuals who struggled. So that was the impetus for me to get into this field.
It is, in my experience, and I am a reasonably well-read individual, that has not been a real focus of the topic. There's been discussion about whether or not it's, quote, a dangerous drug, whether or not it is a gateway drug. But the issue of whether or not there are things like cannabis-induced psychosis, until I read some of your material, and I read it quite some time ago because this movie's been out for about 2 years now, isn't it? Yeah. I had never heard that phrase before, so I'm surprised that it was that far under the radar, if you will.
Yeah, a lot of people say that. What they told us at Harvard was that the science is there and our culture is not. And they said, and brace yourself because it should probably take about 5 or 10 years, it could take that long, for our culture to catch up to the science. But the science is irrefutable, and it's there.
One of the things, and I mentioned it a bit when I talked about the grammatical inference of the way we titled the program, is that a recurring theme that I have heard about, it's in your material, and it's in a lot of the general material out now, especially over the last couple of years as we've had more states become legalizing marijuana, is that people have said, you know, if you're 50 to 70 years old and you smoked pot in high school or college, if you try it now, you will be shocked at the difference in that drug from what it is now versus what it was about 40 years ago. And Tim, you're shaking your head too. Can you give us some background on that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think you've seen a transition of, and what we're talking about is the THC, which is the psychotic component of the marijuana. And so that's conversely with the medical aspects of it, which is the cannabinoids part of the marijuana. So we have seen a significant increase, especially, I think, as Americans, we always want to make things better. And since it's been legalized in the states, we've seen that the way it's grown and that it's legally grown, and there's huge warehouses and a lot of science put into making it a better product, that we've seen the THC contents go way up. And we're seeing a lot of manufacturing of the marijuana now, too. So the marijuana, you know, back in the 60s, 70s may have had a 7, 10% THC. You know, a lot of the concentrates are up into the 80, 90% THC. And that's where I think when Jody talks about the science catching up, or society catching up with the science, we're seeing we really don't know what those high levels of THC impacts have on the brain, especially the developing brain of our youth. And that's where I think it's a dangerous aspect for us with our youth, is having those high THC. There's been studies since the 60s of THC impacts on the human brain. And that's been a pretty consistent study all the way through. But those, the highest levels they've ever studied are in like the teens, like the 17 to 19% THC. Mm-hmm. So we really don't know beyond that anything of what's going to happen, especially with the developing brain. And that's really what I think the strength of POSSIFY's message is to educate the youth, because we're sending a lot of mixed messages to our youth with the medicinal aspects of marijuana, which it does have some medicinal aspects of it. There's no doubt about that. And it can be grown into a higher cannabinoid component for medical and lower THC. Now we've made recreational, you know, marijuana too, which I have problems with the word recreational, but I don't see it as a recreational activity, but that's my personal opinion. But, you know, so our youth is getting these messages that it's a medicine, that it's a recreational activity. And even with Prop 64, it's, you know, adult use, it's 21 or older. But anytime we increase availability, as with alcohol, is the same, there's that youth in all of us that wants to try things that maybe we're not supposed to. So, but the dangers of those high levels of THC involved in the edibles also, which is a lot of them are marketed, I won't say they're marketed towards youth, but I'd say they're attractive to youth with the candies, the cookies, the soda pops. There's another mixed message we're sending to our youth.
The issue has a different or an interesting twist in my mind, because I actually did a lot of study of prohibition and whether or not prohibition worked for a number of reasons. As a society, we figured out that making something that enough people want completely illegal creates, can't think of a better word, an underclass of criminal that becomes harder to deal with than, you know, let me put it this way. The average bootlegger of the Prohibition era was probably far more difficult to regulate and to integrate into society than the guy that I know that happens to own three liquor stores. Okay. That's a regulated industry. Now, one of the things, and we'll get into this in looking at some of Jody's information that she provided, that you both provided for us before the program, was the increase in some issues in Colorado since it's become legalized, and I'll get into that. But from a law enforcement standpoint, and for clarification, yes, you and I had a conversation about this. You're really here as an advisory board member to the nonprofit. We're not here ready to debate it as a law enforcement issue, and I appreciate that. But I think that probably comes up. If we know who's selling it and we know where it's being sold because it's more out in the open, does that become beneficial to ways to control and address it, or is that just going to make it worse?
No, I think there's some definite benefits to that. And obviously, we've heard from the people of California through Prop 64, you know, for the legalization of it for personal use, I'll say. So, yes, having regulations in place gives us something to do. And it's a fine line, too. And I think most cities and counties are struggling with that right now, of putting regulations in place of what they want and how much they want of that in their communities. So having some in place is good. If you limit it too much, then like you talk about, or you prohibit it altogether, it drives a black market and it drives it underground, which can still be enforced and regulated, but it makes it a lot more difficult. So with it being legalized, it makes sense that there should be limited amounts of accessibility for those who choose to do it lawfully and want to do it lawfully, as opposed to making it a complete ban. I don't think anybody's saying really no anymore. It's been legalized. So now it's moving forward with how much regulations are in place, what type of regulations, how many locations do we really need. So really, I think for law enforcement, you mentioned it, it's about controlling it. And I think it's such a new industry, and you're talking about a cash type industry with a very high value, which can drive criminal activity. Not that it all drives criminals, and I'm not saying that people involved in this industry are criminals by any stretch of the imagination.
There are still bootleggers in this country.
There are still bootleggers in this country, even with alcohol.
Yeah.
But it's important for us to regulate that. But we want to regulate it in a way that we let it grow into success, so to speak, rather than it's a very high value industry. They're estimating $7 to $9 billion industry coming into just the state of California. So that's a lot of money to talk about. And the industry, I think, pressure is to let it open up and let it regulate itself, let it find its own natural balance. But I think to start it small and let those who really want to do it right and successfully open businesses and run it, and then let it grow naturally as the need or availability arises.
Mm-hmm. Jody, one of the issues you brought up, which Tim and I just kind of touched on a little bit there, is whether or not we're better off trying to have open control of a dangerous product, or whether or not having it all somewhat underground and illegal becomes harder to control and address. I'm wondering if with any of your work, you're seeing that it's an easier topic to talk about with youth now that it's becoming legal based upon age, or if it's becoming a harder topic to talk about with youth.
Unfortunately, the perception of harm has gone way down. And with that lower perception of harm, the use has gone way up. So it's almost this legalizing, particularly at age 21, which I have a problem with, because the brain's developing, like you said, mid-20s, all the way up to age 30, they showed us at Harvard. So we've just legalized a substance saying this is a safe thing for you to use, and giving that message when it's not safe for somebody 21 years old to be recreationally using this drug. So I think the perception of harm going down with legalization and the usage going up is causing a lot of problem.
Is there an effort to find a way to address that? Because obviously California is not the only state that has legalized marijuana.
Right.
As of, I guess it's January, is it January 1st of 18 is when it technically becomes legal.
So
except under federal law, I realize we can debate that too.
Well, actually, with Prop 64, since it was a proposition, the main components of Prop 64 went into legality at midnight that night. So what you're talking about is in January 2018 is when the state regulations will be put in place, and it's a dual permit system. So you have to have a permit within your local city or county, wherever you're located, and then the state will issue permits also. But that is really for cultivation,
for sale, not for possession.
Cultivation, okay. Manufacturing, dispensaries, all of those aspects. But as of right now with Prop 64, 21 or older can possess legally up to an ounce of marijuana, 8 grams of concentrate. They cannot smoke it in public. That's a misconception. There's a lot of local ordinances that prohibit smoking. But they can possess it, and they can grow up to 6 plants.
And I think back to your question, the thing that we really want to emphasize is educating. So let's educate on what these potential effects are so that our youth know, so they can be empowered if they do choose to use this recreationally or the substance in any way. Have an education about what that is. Now, parents and grandparents don't understand. They don't understand these effects because that didn't happen in the 60s and 70s when it was actually 1 to 3% THC. We're looking at average street marijuana upwards of 25%, and like Tim was saying, in the edibles and in the concentrates, up to 98% THC. That's a hallucinogen. That's a whole different drug. That's not marijuana like we knew marijuana to be.
It's hard to fathom something that's that much stronger than it was 40 or 50 years ago. So that's hard.
And then when you talk about the edibles and you see how they're marketed to children, this is very reminiscent of the tobacco industry. So they are targeting our children to addict a new population because there's a lot of money to be made. And so they have gummy bears and sodas and candies. And you can't tell the difference of what's safe and what's not. So when you have a party, when kids go to parties, they don't know what's infused and what's not.
Yeah. If you're just joining us, we are talking today about the harmful effects of marijuana on youth. And there's a lot of material out there. Jody Belcher, who's with us, along with Undersheriff Tim Olivas. And to make it real clear, we're not talking about this as a law enforcement issue. We're talking about this as a health and well-being issue today. But Jody has put out a phenomenal documentary that's won a number of awards called The Other Side of Cannabis. And it's nice that you're a local in our community. And sometimes that stuff, I realize, if you were to go to Denver to talk about your movie, the fact that you've come from out of Colorado to talk about a national issue would probably oftentimes get you more listened to or paid attention to than when you talk about it in your own hometown. And I think that's because people just, you're just some local that did this interesting thing. And I think that works for a lot of topics, but I'm sure that's come up before. Because you've spoken on it in a number of different venues.
Yeah, I've spoken all over the United States, actually. Mm-hmm. And I actually featured quite a few people from Boulder, Colorado, in my film. Mm-hmm. So, I think people are listening to me here. I'm very fortunate in that one of our board members, Myla Vujovic-Labar, she has invited me in her classroom at Laguna Middle School, mm-hmm. and I've spoken to the 7th and 8th graders, and she shows my film, and then I get to speak with the kids. And, in fact, on my website, you can see letters that they've written anonymously saying how much they've learned and how much they've appreciated getting this education. So it's really important, and that's what Possify is about, and what we're really promoting right now is putting in a new curriculum into our school system, starting with the 7th and 8th grade here in San Luis County.
Yeah. I think historically, and this is a personal opinion, that when I actually thought the DARE program personally was pretty good, and Just Say No seemed to be a good slogan. I believe when we have a society that's looking at things strictly from a black and white standpoint, it's hard to get people to make informed decisions. It's if you just tell me no all the time, I want to know why you're telling me no, as opposed to you're giving me information to make informed decisions.
Right.
What kind of responses do you get from middle school students when you show the film or talk to them?
I often get back in my car and I sit there and cry because it's so powerful. Many of them, they're very honest and forthright. Many of them talk about how they have family members who are struggling with marijuana issues and other drug issues. Some of them talk about how they themselves have, and they seek help after we've spoken to them. It's just incredible what they have to say about it. They want this education. They want to learn why. And when you tell a youth about the brain chemistry and how it's affecting their brain, they understand. They're capable of understanding that it's permanently altering their chemistry in their brain, and it can create lifelong issues. So we know that THC disrupts the pruning process of the brain, which occurs during adolescence and young teens. And that pruning process, they have just come out with a study recently that shows schizophrenia is a result of a pruning issue. Well, so that's not a surprise to me that there's a correlation between marijuana use in adolescence and schizophrenia. But we haven't really been able to pinpoint. There's some researchers in Canada who are pinpointing that now, that the THC disrupts that pruning process, and that's why we're seeing this onset of schizophrenia. Now, schizophrenia may have been dormant, something that was in your chemistry or in your history, may have never, ever been triggered.
So it may be a triggering issue as opposed to an actual propagating issue, if you will, for the brain.
Absolutely.
For some kids. We've kept this away from the law enforcement part of this for a very good reason, because it really is a medical and a health issue. But I want to broach, I guess, one part of this with you, Tim, and that is when we're talking about kids as young as some younger, but there are a significant number of kids, 12 to 14 years old. That have experimented with marijuana or are regular users. When it is legal in the state of California and their parents or their older siblings or friends might have a stash somewhere, it becomes more readily available to them, because I'm not quite clear how a 12-year-old in the current environment finds someone that he can buy or acquire marijuana from. So I'm wondering if what we've done is open up a channel of availability that's going to, in and of itself, be the most difficult thing to conquer.
Yes, you're absolutely right. I think that's one of the major concerns when we're talking about youth. It's that anytime you increase accessibility, you're going to have more use. So whether it's adults that they're around, and I think Jody will tell you, when she does talk with these youth at the schools and when we see them out there, the parents are thinking in a mindset of back in the 70s of the marijuana and the dangerous aspects of it. And we're not really as concerned for the adult aspect of this and the use of marijuana, and that's certainly a personal choice of them. But the increased availability creates that access point for our youth to get their hands on that, to try it, to experiment with it. And that's what we're trying to educate, because a lot of the information, as we talked about there, is sending mixed messages to them. What we want to educate them is there are true dangers. It may not happen to you, but it certainly can. Whether it's that psychotic trigger, whether it's the first time, whether it's the 10th time you use it, and the damage that can occur in that developing brain all the way up through the late 20s is the biggest challenge we're going to face with our youth. I feel like I have friends and I have direct family members that have had instances with their kids using marijuana and having those psychotic episodes, whether they're long-term or whether they're short-term. But it's pretty dramatic to the entire family unit. It's not just that individual. So we're seeing those aspects and that increased availability now that you can grow it yourself. There's going to be regulations that are in place, but you're going to be able to grow it yourself, or after January, there's going to be availability within the cities, within the counties. Anytime you do that, it's going to be like alcohol. It's like having the alcohol in the cabinet, you know, when you were young and, you know, could you sneak a little alcohol? It's those same aspects we're going to be experiencing with the marijuana, which is going to drive the market.
I know people who are in, I'm trying to figure their ages out in some of these cases, I would say in their mid-60s to early 70s, that are lifelong marijuana smokers, mm-hmm. or lifelong marijuana users, never been arrested, never been busted. They're obviously, to this point, unless they happen to have a medical certificate, I don't know about that, had to acquire it illegally. I'm wondering if the fact that it has been so readily available illegally for so long has driven part of the feeling that it's just it's everyday and ordinary, even though it has not been legal until the latest proposition. Is to either of you, is that affecting how families see it? Because my observation would be, somebody in mind who has adult children and grandchildren already, I believe their view might be, oh, you know, I've been smoking this for 40 years and I'm just
that
fine.
Is a huge
What's the
problem.
Big deal?
A huge problem, because they don't understand that they weren't smoking this when they were in their brain development years. So they got away with something that these kids today are not.
I would interject, and you can continue that, but I would interject that I think that in the late 60s, even though it was everybody was talking about the drug culture and everything like that, I would say the ability for a 12 or 14-year-old to acquire marijuana in, let's say, 1968 was indeed a lot harder than it was this year.
That's also true. That's also true. But that marijuana back then was not going to affect the brain. In some cases it did, but not like it is today, not like we're seeing today.
And I think some of the challenge they're seeing is the delivery method, I'll say. So it's not, you know, everybody, you know, from that generation thinks of smoking a green plant. It's not a green plant anymore. It's a manufactured narcotic. You have dabs, you have earwax, they make it into shatter. These are all
earwax.
Earwax, yeah, I know.
It's a term I've not heard from.
And they're vaping.
They're vaping. Oh, the edibles are, I mean, you take a gummy bear and they just take a regular gummy bear and they spray it with THC. So the control of how much THC is on these products is a concern. 10 milligrams is considered a dose of THC. Well, a gummy bear has 30 to 40 milligrams on it. So, the idea is that you just bite a small portion of the gummy bear. Well, I don't know if you've ever eaten gummy bears. Rarely do you bite just a small portion of a gummy bear.
I do not eat a part of one gummy bear.
It's the same thing with soda. The sodas that we filmed in the documentary, there's five doses in a soda. Well, what teenager is going to drink a fifth of a soda? So this is a problem. So they're ending up in the ER psychotic. And one thing I wanted to mention is people often talk about how there are never any deaths from marijuana. But what we're seeing, and I've seen a lot of it, is that once these kids are triggered psychotic, that we are seeing suicides. And a number of them, alarming number of them, as a result. So it is leading, and not just deaths by suicide, but also by accidents, people falling off of buildings, in cars, a lot of drug driving fatalities with marijuana in the system. So yes, there are deaths associated with marijuana use.
Well, actually, you bring up an interesting point, because you mentioned in some of your material that the number of traffic incidents and fatalities in Colorado went up.
Significantly, I don't know. Yes.
Is that because I don't know that anybody who chooses to consume marijuana would necessarily be concerned about whether or not they're doing it while driving, if it's legal versus illegal.
They think they're safer drivers when they're under the influence of marijuana. That's what the studies have shown.
They're safe. Okay,
That's what they say.
It threw me a little bit. The concept. I'm a safer driver because I'm stoned.
That's
okay.
What they say.
All right.
Yes, they don't think twice about getting behind the wheel stoned.
That's interesting. I have to share with you. If I have a half a glass of wine, my wife drives. Okay, but that's just who I am.
Well, that's part of the education, right? So we've been very well educated. We've got warning labels on bottles of alcohol, on cigarette packets. We have warning labels. We have nothing out there for marijuana. So what is the warning that we're giving to our children about these potential effects? And that's exactly it.
Yeah. So how many states is it legal in now?
It's a great question.
Okay.
A lot.
Okay.
More coming.
What I'm wondering is whether or not there are any specific studies that are doing serious tracking of how much of it's ending up in the schools. Are, you know, if you look at Colorado pre or post, Oregon pre or post, whether or not there is more of it in schools at a younger age because of that.
Absolutely. And you can go on learnaboutsam.com, Smart Approaches to Marijuana. Dr. Kevin Sabet started with Senator Kennedy, Patrick Kennedy.
Okay. So if you Google Learn About Sam,
if you just
maybe,
go www.learnaboutsam.com, I think it's .com. they have all the latest information, And it's a tremendous clearinghouse of information, and it's a great organization. And they speak all over the United States exactly about that.
Yeah. I don't want to make this too personal for you if it gets uncomfortable.
Okay.
How many years ago was your son diagnosed with any kind of condition based upon his marijuana use? And what has had to be done medically to help your son?
So it's been since the beginning, maybe 7-8 years, mm-hmm. of in and out of recovery programs and in and out of hospitalizations, and recently more. I think the difficulty is once you become addicted to marijuana, not everybody becomes addicted, but 9% do. It's, I think, 25% to 50% if you're a daily user, if you're a youth, that you will become addicted to marijuana. So the addiction is very, very difficult to treat. And then you get triggered mentally ill, as he was, and now you have a real problem with insight into the addiction. So it's a vicious circle of trying to treat one or the other or both simultaneously, and it's very, very complicated. So we've struggled, and he's struggled. I don't know what the future holds for him. I'm hoping that he will be able to, as he grows with it and gets older and gets more insight into it, that he will be able to control it better. But it's very difficult. It's very, as Tim was saying, it's very difficult on families and the community and everybody. We all struggle. Yeah.
Are there lots of school districts that are now looking at healthy programs to address this for kids, and how young are they starting?
So that's a great question. So Possify, I started because I recognized there was a great need for younger children to be taught these effects. Because if you try to tell high school students or college students about these effects of marijuana, they're not listening. They will not listen. And I know that because I've spoken to many, many schools.
And for many, it may be too late.
It's too late. And they've made up their minds, and they don't want to hear it. And they're going to show you their studies and question your studies. Although every study that I've been given where they try to tell me that their study shows different than mine, I send it to my neuroscientist who checks it for controls, and once she checks it, we can show how that study doesn't hold up. But in any case, Possify was started to do exactly that, to create education in the schools, and we would like to start with the 7th and 8th grades. We have contacted the superintendent of schools, and we're hoping to meet with them because we found a program that is fantastic called Project Alert. And it's by the RAND Corporation. It's evidence-based, and it's a fantastic, fantastic curriculum on substance abuse prevention in 7th and 8th grade. Now, whether or not we're I think they're utilizing some of Project Alert now, currently, but not enough. Mm-hmm. And we need to hopefully get it implemented more fully. The good news is they've just applied for a grant, and if that grant comes through, then they will assist all of our schools, both with incentives for teachers and students and with full-on programming. So it's free, and it's available, and we could get started today. So if anybody has 7th and 8th graders out there and want to help get this program implemented here in San Luis County, we hope to start with this county, and we hope to move throughout California and eventually move throughout the United States, because we think this is very, very valuable and very necessary. The younger we educate, the proof is that they will make better decisions.
So this is an educational program that's not just dealing with marijuana. It's
exactly.
Dealing with all substances.
Exactly.
So because in my thought, and I have no basis on science, it's just my hunch, that if you can look at all substances as issues,
yes.
including alcohol, and put it together, then it becomes more effective, maybe easier to teach that as there's already things, you know, there are things that your parents are openly doing that they may be very okay at. There are children who probably have parents who drink way too much, and there are children who have parents who think, oh, my dad drinks a half a glass of wine a day every day, and I never see a negative effect from it, so I guess there's okay ways to do that.
Right.
So if we put this all together, so if we're looking at all potentially mind-altering substances, for lack of a better way to classify it, the youth is more attuned to paying attention to that than if we just
right.
separate out marijuana, I would assume.
No, absolutely. Yeah. And the Project Alert is about not just that, but it's about empowering students to make better decisions, better healthy decisions in all areas. So it's a wonderful program. You can go on Project Alert, I think it's .org. I wrote it down. And they have, you can see all of their materials online.
Yeah. What I remind our listeners often about, and it seems to work pretty well, and that is the wonders of Google.
Yeah.
If you put in even half a phrase spelled wrong, because I spell everything wrong, you will still generally find exactly what you need to know from that standpoint.
Yeah, and you can also go on our website, which is posify.org, P-O-S-A-F-Y, posify.org.
Thank you. I guess, Tim, this is a question for you. The issues with medical marijuana and the butting heads between the federal government and the state government make a lot of newsworthy stories and interesting writing for journalists. Is the federal government's desire to still look at this as an illegal substance under any circumstances make it more difficult to educate? Or because I think if I were 14 years old and it would say, okay, the federal government says this is awful and evil and blah blah blah, and the state of California says it's okay, and by the way, my dad was smoking a doobie yesterday. Is that a word they still use? I don't know. Anyway, okay. I'm wondering whether or not that struggle from a governmental and law standpoint makes it more difficult to really educate, because that kind of legal struggle gets in the way of talking about whether or not it's a substance issue.
Yeah, I don't know if it makes it. I think it sends a mixed message. Again, okay. Like a lot of the aspects that we're hearing about marijuana and what today's marijuana is, I don't know if it would if it's going to really create a roadblock for us, unless it's a funding issue, which mm-hmm. can be a roadblock for education, because if the federal government says no and the states or local entities are saying yes, well, the federal government could unfund certain projects that are funded through federal dollars. So that would be the roadblock I would see. But really with POSIFY's message and, you know, with Project Alert, what we're talking about is, you mentioned DARE earlier, yeah. And, you know, and the Sheriff's Office teaches great. All of those programs, really, they focus on substance abuse, and they focus on the negative aspects of that. But they also, it's about decision making, and it's about a way of life and how those decisions can impact your life both short term and long term. And I think that's what we focus on with the youth. I think POSIFY's message is, because marijuana is such a new endeavor in the sense of it's not new to us really, but this is a different type of marijuana. And the impacts it's going to have on youth are so unknown right now. And we've sent so many mixed messages with the medicinal part of marijuana, with the recreational, use of marijuana, with now we're going to be selling it in stores and all that. I think the youth has an impression that it's not dangerous. And that's what we're trying to educate them in, is the decision-making. Really educate yourself, have knowledge on how impactful it can be in your life, and make a decision of whether you don't want to use it or if you want to use it.
It's a dilemma for a lot of people.
Well, yeah, and I think, too, the parents need to understand.
Absolutely.
Because if the parents aren't understanding this, and a lot of them don't want to hear about it.
Yeah, I think it's been kind of a reoccurring part of our discussion today, that it keeps rolling to the top of my hard drive, which is if your parents still, or if the parents still think that, oh, it's just like it was 40 years ago, that may be the most difficult education process you have. If you're 14 and you're just starting to evolve around being around something like marijuana and having peer pressure for that, that's different than if you're 60. And actually, there aren't too many parents of 14 years old that are 60 already, but that's anyway. But if you're 45 to 60 years old, and your thought is, you know, yeah, I used to smoke it when I was a kid, and and I don't do that anymore, but there wasn't, it didn't, it was okay. That becomes a tremendously difficult population to educate.
Well, and the numbers, too. I mean, this has been alarming to me. I just got this statistic today. Every day, 7,000 new people try marijuana for the first time, far greater than trends seen in the early 2000s. And it said they found the number of daily or near-daily users of marijuana in 2016 doubled compared to the number of heavy users a decade ago. So the numbers rose significantly among age groups 12 and up, 18 and up, and 26 and up. And almost twice as many 12 to 17-year-olds are using pot as compared to cigarettes on a past month basis. So we're talking about a great many more people than it used to be anyway in that age group, right? Mm-hmm. So we're looking at much greater population.
And you mentioned a comparison between tobacco and marijuana, because the general presumption, and I'm not sure how completely accurate it is, but the general presumption is that, we've known for a long time cigarettes were really bad, but marijuana, even if you smoke it, doesn't have there's no nicotine in it, and that nicotine is the evil health hazard of tobacco consumption.
So the studies that I've seen show that marijuana is much more harmful carcinogens than in cigarettes, and that will come out. Those studies will come out. We just don't have the long-range studies because we haven't had this long enough to see them come forward. But we will see that. In fact, we knew in the 1920s that cigarettes were harmful to us, but we didn't do anything about it till when? It was like the 70s, I think, 60s, 70s. And that wasn't because we found out it was harmful, because we already knew that. It was because we found out they were addicting our children to make money. That's when things shifted. That's when we had our campaigns and our education. And that's what's happening with marijuana, is the big money wants to addict our children. They want our children to smoke. So there's a lot of information out there to encourage them to try it and get on board with it.
It brings up an interesting point that I hadn't thought about until you just said that, because one of the things I've thought about is that with cigarette smoking, one of the impetuses to get cigarette smoking to go down is to raise the price of product. My hunch is, can't prove it by anything, but my hunch is that legalized marijuana is going to be less expensive than illegal marijuana, so that financial incentive becomes the inverse with marijuana.
You might be onto something there.
Well, I was just curious as to whether or not there'd been any look at that maybe
in
Colorado.
And by the way, the black market is alive and well in Colorado. So it did not do anything to deter that market, because they don't tax their products. So they are less expensive. So that market exists. We don't get rid of the black market, and Tim can speak to that better than I, but...
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think we touched on that earlier. Mm-hmm. It's kind of a fine balance of how many establishments you allow to provide adequate access, as opposed to taxation, too. You can tax it super high to where it increases the black market, because it's cheaper in the mm-hmm. black market if overtaxation occurs. So it's a fine balance, but either way, we're talking about a weed and that grows pretty readily without a lot of effort. You know, it can be finited, and, you know, and it's definitely turned into a science, but it's not hard to grow marijuana. So there's always going to be a black market aspect of it. Anytime you have a regulated industry, there's always going to be a black market, and it's trying to balance those to reduce. I don't know if you'll ever eliminate a black market just because of value in dollars, but try and balance it to where it's eliminated and it can be controlled or enforced, as opposed to a legal regulated industry.
Yeah, as I said earlier, we still have bootleggers in this country.
Absolutely.
Even though alcohol's been legal again for 70, I don't remember, 70 plus years. Can't remember quite what it works out to be. But that's a fact.
I wanted to tell you, too, about, you asked me earlier about the alcohol versus marijuana. And one thing that people don't understand is that with alcohol, one-time use most likely is not going to trigger a mental illness. I've never heard of that before. And it usually doesn't trigger an addiction immediately either. But what we found with marijuana is that it stores in the fatty tissue cells, so it stays in your system 30 to 60 days and continuously leaches out. So you really have some element of it still in your system, and that you could be triggered in your first time usage, psychotic, or later on with a permanent mental illness that really doesn't exist with first time
use. We haven't paid attention to that before, so that's a very good point. Yeah. We do have a call. See, Jared from Atascadero, thanks. We don't have a whole lot of time, Jared, but jump on in.
I just have a question. Some of the research is being cited here. I mean, not only with the psychosis and the probability of this, you know, triggering an event, but my understanding is that most of the research that's been done is very inconclusive as to whether people that are predisposed to mental illness are also predisposed to self-medicate, and the causal relationship there is fairly inconclusive as well. And I understand that there are advocates on the program, but it seems to me that if you're going to make comparisons, you should make comparisons with regard to other substances, you know, alcohol, tobacco, et cetera. And so I just want to, you know, I guess my question is, what are the source of these studies that you're citing, and is there really enough research to be making these sort of conclusions right now? And I'll take my answer off the air.
Okay. Thanks very much. You want to tackle that at all? I mean, I guess the question really is there enough research to really draw the conclusions you're drawing at this point?
Yes, there is. Okay. And there's numerous sites. You can go on my OSCDOC.com website, and I have many, many references there of studies, and they are robust, reliable studies. And when you talk about other substances, other substances also can trigger these kinds of things. But we're talking about marijuana in this particular case, but absolutely other substances, and alcohol can also cause other issues as well. And that's why POSIFY wants to take on all substances. But with the proliferation of the marijuana, we particularly want to make sure kids are educated about these potential effects.
Yeah, because you did say early in the program that we're talking about something that has been perceived by this point, two generations of North Americans as a reasonably benign drug, even though it was illegal.
Right.
So that level of comfort may be a factor in that,
right,
too. So we may not have completely addressed Jared's call, but you'll be able to maybe get a better understanding if you your website has some links on it.
Yeah, you can go on and take a look at where we drive our information.
All righty. Mm-hmm. We only have a few minutes left, and as most of our listeners know, because I talk too much on the program, I try and get out of the way when I can in the last few minutes. And Jody, by default, I'm going to give you the last word, so I'm going to give Tim the second to the last word here. We've got a couple of minutes. What do you think we want to make sure people come away with as an understanding of what they need to pay attention to?
I think the three words I'd use is educate, educate, educate. Don't listen to just the industry and what's out there, and don't believe everything you read online. As Jody said, a lot of the studies, there's a lot of research in there. Colorado has done a lot of studies. Go out there and find out really what is marijuana and what it is today as opposed to what it was. As you mentioned earlier, I think that was a great point. Probably our biggest educational aspect is the parents and getting them educated on the impacts. It's not the marijuana that was smoked, you know, back in the 60s, 70s, 80s, even 90s. It is turned into, it's a synthesized drug a lot of times. And in the edibles and in the formats it in can be very dangerous with the really high THC contents. So we're not saying no and that marijuana is just this evil thing and nobody should use it. I think our focus is on the youth and that developing brain and trying to educate the parents as well as the kids in our society of how damaging that could be for them long term.
Yeah, very good point.
Yeah, and one thing that I wanted to mention that Tim just reminded me is that there are components of the cannabis plant. There are the CBDs, the cannabidiol, that are showing really great promise as a medicine, a true medicine, and it's an antipsychotic because it naturally occurs in the plant to balance the THC. So that is a very promising thing, I think, even for our family situation that we may be able to use someday to help with psychosis. So I do think there are components, and there's a lot of good research going on. I know there's some trials going on in Israel right now with the CBDs that are really, really good. So, no, I don't think, just like what is the plant that, opium, we get morphine. And so morphine's a really good drug for some people. They need morphine if they're sick or injured. And so if it's used responsibly, I think it can be very good. So I don't negate the entire cannabis plant, and I don't I'm not an anti-cannabis person. I just really believe we need to educate youth from what I've seen in all of my thousands of hours of research. I got my master's degree in addictive disorders this year, and I know that it can be very damaging lifelong for children. So as a result, educate, get involved in POSSIFY if you can, possify.org. Please go on our website, join us, help us get these programs in place in the schools. We're hoping eventually to get programming as early as kindergarten and develop throughout all of the grades. We're starting with 7th and 8th grades. We welcome your input. We appreciate you having us on and getting this word out there. It's really, really important.
Okay. I want to make sure. POSSIFY is POSSAFY. Because I don't think you'll find it on any grammatical chart or dictionary from that standpoint. So I think it's very good from that standpoint. The name of the film?
The Other Side of Cannabis.
Okay, and where's it available?
And they can go on my website, oscdoc.com. And the film now is streaming or DVD.
Okay, great.
And if you make a donation to POSSIFY, you get a really cool POSSIFY keychain.
Okay, cool. All righty. Thanks very much.
Thank you for being on the program.
It's a topic that will be debated a lot and discussed a lot, too, and that's healthy for all of us. That's very good. I thank you for joining us today. Thank you for being part of KCBX. And as we've told you before, this is Fall Pledge Drive. This is a community-supported program and a community-supported station, and you're part of that community. There are those of us, as myself, who are volunteers here, but there's also paid staff, and it does take money to keep the doors open. So I appreciate it if you can continue to support KCBX. Central Coast Voices is a production of Action for Healthy Communities, which is a project of the Community Foundation of San Luis Obispo County, and of course in collaboration with Public Radio KCBX. Action puts out a report, which we did quote some information from earlier today, called Vital Signs, Understanding San Luis Obispo County. The report comes out every 3 years. The latest report came out in December of 2016. You can see the entire report at actionslo.org, and it is available and free for download in part or in total with no restriction. And it's a PDF you can read for a long time with some interesting information about San Luis County. Next week, the program is Enriching the Lives of Children Through Art, and the mission of the Paso Robles Youth Arts Foundation is to enrich the lives of our youth everywhere with free classes. They provide 300 students age 5 to 18 with 50 art and other type of art programs and art classes every week in over 1,200 students per year. Chris Kington Barker will be speaking next week with folks from the Paso Robles Youth Foundation about how this program works effectively for them. Central Coast Voices, as I told you, is a collaboration with KCBX Public Radio, and this program is made possible by the underwriting with Joan Gellert Sargent, and we appreciate her support. You can reach us at voices@kcbx.org with comment, feedback, or program suggestions, or 543-2323. And I want to thank my guest today, Jody Belcher and Tim Olivas. I'm sorry. I always blow the name towards the end of the program. This has been Central Coast Voices. Thank you for joining us today.